Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, March 31st, 2015. The South Sudan government rejects a proposal to include the Troika at the negotiating table when peace talks resume.
They have already decided to punish us. Are they neutral to come and mediate again? These people, whether you call it Troika or the UN, these are people who have lost credibility.
And health officials create awareness about the benefits of clean and safe drinking water for residents in Juba.
In total, we had 6,421 people affected with 167 deaths, a case fatality rate of 2.6%.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir's government says it does not support a proposal to include mediators from the United States, Britain, and Norway in the next round of peace talks. The Intergovernmental Authority on Drought, or IGAD, this month announced plans to expand the talks mediation team to include representatives from three countries known as the Troika, as well as from Africa, the European Union, China, and the United Nations. As Charlton Doki reports from Juba, South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makui says only African mediators will be acceptable to the government.
IGAD calls its new mediation formula for South Sudan IGAD Plus. Makui says that the South Sudan government understands this to mean that in addition to IGAD mediators, there will be representatives from other regions of Africa at the talks. But he says the South Sudan government was not informed that representatives of the Troika would be helping to mediate the next round of talks. He says if there are Troika officials at the negotiating table as mediators, when the talks resume, the South Sudan government will reject them.
Because they are the very people who demanded that sanctions must be passed against the government of South Sudan. They have already decided to punish us. Are they neutral to come and mediate again? These people, whether you call it Troika or the UN, these are people who have lost credibility.
The United States sponsored a United Nations Security Council resolution calling for a sanctions regime to be set up for South Sudan. The resolution passed unanimously early this month. It would allow the United Nations to impose targeted sanctions against senior individuals who are seen to be blocking peace in South Sudan. It does not specifically mention the government. Last week, the United States Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, Donald Booth, told reporters that IGAD invited members of the international community to be part of the talks to help move the process forward.
Well, the IGAD Plus is plus the five African countries that the African Union has designated. It is plus the African Union Commission. It is plus the Troika, the European Union, and China. As well as the United Nations. So the idea is those countries, those institutions that are major stakeholders in South Sudan would be there to support the efforts of South Sudanese toward achieving a negotiated peace.
Makui has been the spokesman for the government delegation at the IGAD-led peace talks, which have been running for nearly 15 months. He insists the Troika is biased against his side.
They have already decided to move against the government and the people of South Sudan. And this is why the sanction was passed. How do they come again and say, now you sit on the table, come and sit before me, I will be your mediator. To mediate on what? We will not accept them if they come, because they don't qualify any longer.
The United States, Britain and Norway have supported the peace process since it began in January last year. In addition to providing funds for the travel and accommodation of delegates, Troika officials have participated as observers at the ongoing talks. Makui says that's as far as their role at the talks should go. They should observe, not mediate. Last week, Booth said the Troika will continue to support efforts to restore peace in South Sudan, regardless of the mediation structure. He said both sides in the talks must be willing to compromise.
When we listen to all the parties at the peace talks, we tried to be helpful in putting forward ideas for compromises, but always saying these are just our ideas. You can take them, you can leave them. The compromises need to be South Sudanese compromises. But those ideas need to be floated because the peace talks have gone on for 15 months and you still do not have a peace agreement.
The most recent round of peace talks for South Sudan ended early this month without a deal to end 15 months of fighting that has claimed thousands of lives and displaced nearly 2 million people. IGAD said before those talks started that they were the last chance for peace in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
Humanitarian aid agencies say millions of South Sudanese are facing food insecurity due to the 15-month-long conflict. Once again, we have several reports for you today on food insecurity, beginning with Gabe Joslo, who visited a rebel held territory in South Sudan where people are eating leaves to stay alive.
When all other options are exhausted, people here in Lankian, South Sudan, strip leaves from the trees as their last resort for food. Poor harvests, conflict, and constraints on trade have pushed this area into what humanitarian agencies have classified as a level 3 food crisis, two steps below famine. Nabia Al-Mashar says she and her family are running out of supplies and have no income for food.
There's no employment here and no money. We get very little support, so I will survive on what I can get from the forest, wild fruits and leaves.
Lankian is in the heartland of the opposition, where mostly ethnic Nuer rebel soldiers have taken up arms against the government of President Salva Kiir. Because the area is surrounded by government forces, the town is becoming increasingly isolated.
This market is usually the center of activity in Lankian, but since the current conflict has shut down the surrounding roads, there's only one trade route coming in from Ethiopia. So the limited amount of supplies are really jacking up the prices of commodities here and putting the pressure on the local community.
While the stress is severe here, it may not seem as apparent as in other parts of the country that are closer to famine. The local humanitarian coordinator for the county, War BL Pam, says to the outsider, this place may not seem like it is food insecure, but look closer.
If you could come before crisis, the market was so big. A lot of food, a lot of commodities. But nowadays, there's not enough food. People are many, you can see many people are moving around, densely populated in this area, and the food is not enough.
United Nations airdrops and the distribution of basic dry foods have helped stave off a much worse crisis. But the deliveries are not always on schedule, and stocks from the last drop are already running low. Humanitarian groups are considering ways to better support the population during the coming rainy season, according to Alberto Macaire of Oxfam.
If not direct food distribution or whatever support we are giving, then it will mean other intervention like cash, maybe giving to traders to make sure that they buy a lot of this good during dry season. And during wet season, there will still be a lot of goods in the market for people to access.
Rains are not expected until May, which means as food supplies dry up and conflict blocks access and movement, people here are going to have to dig deep and keep doing whatever it takes to survive. Gabe Joselo, VOA News, Lankian, South Sudan.
After surviving the deadly conflict, one farmer in Bor town who supplies mango, guava and lemon to local markets says his struggle to overcome enormous challenges are typical of farmers across South Sudan. Jacob has the report on one of his struggles.
Before becoming a farmer, Amol was director of environment in Jonglei State's Ministry of Physical Infrastructure. As an environmentalist, he recognized that the trees being cut down should be replaced with fruit trees like mango and guava to help improve the state finance. The seedling initiative started out as a side interest for Amol, but soon became a full-time enterprise.
Plantation of mango is successful. I'm now introducing the sugarcane, the banana. So a community around me, they are now taking initiative by taking this sugarcane, by taking this mango. So if you are interested, you the donors, you the agencies, you can still join me so that we bring this farm to the level of being a demonstrative farm.
Besides fruits, Amol grow eggplant, tomato, cabbages and onion. But his big money henna is the fruit trees. He says during the rainy season, the guava tree produces more fruit than local market can handle. He would like to travel to Juba or other large market to sell his guava, but he cannot because of the flood impassable road. Amol says if he had a little help, it would make all the differences.
What I need is also partnership. Those who will come and have their preach round, they take mango when it is excessive. They take guava when it is excessive. Too much of fruit now and there is no preach, it's a headache. And it can even get our fruit be lost.
Amol hopes he can connect with some entrepreneurs who would either help establish a refrigeration unit in Bo town or find ways to transport his excess fruit to nearby town for sale in the marketplaces or to commercial vendors.
People want my guava in Juba and they don't get it because I cannot take it to Juba while I have no pickup. A small pickup, we can pick it. It is not there. So we just lose this one to water any time because we cannot take this fruit at a go. It's even also perishable. It gets rotten quickly.
Amol appreciates the help he received and is proud of how far he has come these first 18 years.
The government, yes, is helping me politically. They are giving me the land and I'm now free. I can even extend my garden to the way I want.
But he knew that taxes can be fluctuating. He worried about having enough access to water for irrigation.
I have about 10 water pump generators, which use for the watering of the garden, the vegetable like sukumawiki, tomato, and eggplant, etc., okra. All this, they need water every day.
Amol knew that while he is relatively successful, he must incorporate modern farming techniques to stay successful. He said if he had the equipment to upgrade his farming techniques, his productivity would increase. But none of the matter if he can't get his fruit and vegetable to other markets.
There is no need for one wheelbarrow to take the whole fruits of about 800 trees to the market. So I just take the litter to the market every day, and there are some other common men around. Some ladies, they come and take one bag, two bags to the market, and this one is not enough. It's for the local consumption.
For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
A South Sudanese professor of resource economics says his native country has the ability to feed the East African region if the government in Juba concentrates on its agricultural resources. Sam Lucky says South Sudan's soil is suitable for production of a variety of food items needed to feed thousands of South Sudanese who face food insecurity. Lucky says the Ministry of Agriculture should come up with programs that can help farming and pastoralist communities address food insecurity.
In order for the farmers to cultivate enough food surplus that could then be shipped to the urban centers for consumption, they need some support from the government, and that could be in the form of, say, research, market information, credit availability, infrastructural kind of development, and also some reforms in the local taxation system so that it becomes a lot easier to just transport food from the producing areas to the urban centers for marketing without much interference from the local authorities in terms of trying to extract some local kind of taxes and all that.
But the government will argue that when the Comprehensive Peace Agreement was signed in 2005, there was that 8 years of period where the government was trying to put its house in order, and then came the independence. And so they still argue that it was a young country and it had a lot of priorities to look at. Agriculture was, of course, one of the priorities, but they would say they had a lot of other issues to look at.
That is not very convincing, given that you have a new country, you expect the population to be growing very fast and all that, and you need enough food for the population. What they should have actually done is put the structures in place that could lead to real meaningful agricultural development. And of course, the main focus should be to feed the people. You can't really depend on imports of food. If it's not because the country is blessed with oil, that could be almost near to impossible. 8 years is a long time.
Some people are still arguing that, yes, agriculture is one of the main, you know, income for the country, but they are saying the technical know-how is not there. A lot of people have fled the country. Experts like you are no longer on the ground to help farmers, you know, embark on agriculture. How would you address this brain drain or lack of experts in the region, local experts I'm talking about?
The issue of instability has to be tackled. And also the fact that the government was established from scratch, and it's established so fast that actually individuals that worked in the ministries were not really interviewed and matched to their capability. A lot of the South Sudanese that have been in the diaspora have actually returned, and some of them have stayed, but many others ended up returning to their respected countries for the simple reason that when they went home, they felt that they were not really so much welcomed because there were no well-established structures in place actually where they could at least get started and get the necessary support and work as hard as possible. So it's not too late actually if the focus is to be redirected a little bit into the issue of manpower and the resources that are scattered inside the country as well as outside the country. I think that the whole system can be reorganized and food production could increase, and the country will not have to depend so much on import.
Let's look at this food production issue. I have heard from several agricultural experts that if South Sudan embarks on agriculture, it will feed Africa. But I don't understand how this is going to be put into practice.
In order to put that into practice and produce more food, we need some investments in the agricultural sector and also the non-agricultural sector. And the non-agricultural sector would include education, the transportation. And then in the agricultural area, you need research to be taking place. You need proper transportation system. The government has to be able to collect information and share it with the stakeholders or the farmers. You need extension workers at a grassroots level, as well as credit opportunities for those farmers that don't have really that much money, because in order to produce beyond subsistence, one needs some support, especially from the government. So that will come in the form of support services.
That's Professor Sam Lucky of the Central State University in Ohio. He was talking to me earlier today from Wilberforce, Ohio. In our Food Insecurity series tomorrow, we talk about how the Horn of Africa became food insecure and what lessons can South Sudan learn from that event. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus. From the Voice of America, what is being done in South Sudan to reduce the number of cholera cases? That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do most people you know pay taxes?
Yes, they do. Most people I know are consumers. So as we know in this country, everything that we buy has a tax. So yeah, every person I know pays taxes.
Most people I know don't pay taxes because most of these small-scale industries are not regulated. The people are able to exempt themselves from paying taxes because they are not being monitored.
They don't really monitor people that pay or don't pay because there are those that are quite illegal to work in the country, and the government doesn't do anything about it. So people go away with it. Even foreigners would come and stick around, and they, of course, because of the too much corruption, people skip taxes all the time.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about cholera. The Director General of Preventive Diseases at the South Sudan Ministry of Health says more than 35,000 South Sudanese have contracted the waterborne disease since 2006. As Philip Thonaleu reports for VOA from Juba, lawmakers say they are trying to curb the number by delivering more clean water to residents in the capital.
In 2006, 19,000 cases of cholera were reported in the then southern Sudan, resulting in 5,000 deaths. John Romano says that figure dropped to 6,000 cases in 2014. He says all records point to three major cholera outbreaks.
One is in 2006, where we had like up to 19,277 cases of cholera with a case fatality rate of 2.9. And that was followed by another outbreak in 2007 with 10,427 cases and 411 deaths, which bring us to case fatality rate of 3.9%. And also last year we had another outbreak which started on 29th of April up to November. And in total, we had 6,421 people affected with 167 deaths, a case fatality rate of 2.6%.
Romano says in the 2006 cholera outbreak, the index case with a pass to the past incident of the disease was stretched to a bar hole in the Munuki residential area of Juba. Romano says this clearly indicates that many people drink from unclean water sources. He says many people in town do not have access to pipe water. But the situation is even worse in rural areas where there are no clean water outlets. South Sudan's Ministry of Health, in collaboration with international non-governmental organizations, today hosts another event in Juba in honor of World Water Day, which was March 22nd, to raise awareness about drinking clean water and avoid unhealthy practices which can compromise water sources. Romano says clean boreholes are a must.
Hygiene and sanitation are very, very important in propagation of infection. So water plays a big role in transmission of cholera if not handled well.
Romano says cases of cholera have surfaced in all major South Sudanese towns, including the capital Juba, Yei, Jonglei State Bor, and Upper Nile State Malakal. He says no town is sparse and that calls for action from local authorities. Pastor Abdulaziz, the deputy of mayor of Juba City Council, says it is embarrassing to report cases of cholera in the nation's capital. He says City Council is doing what it can to reduce the number of cases of cholera.
We have service improvement. Service improvement means ensure that the garbages are collected very well, ensuring that we establish a well-structured community organization such as local councils that will play a key role in ensuring that execution of the safe hygienic practices are in place.
Abdulaziz admits that writing fines won't stop the problem.
This is a behavioral change, and therefore the impact usually takes time. It's slow but sure.
Only 32% of people residing in major South Sudanese towns have access to pipe water. But South Sudan has in place an ambitious plan to reach at least 85% of Juba residents with pipe water by the year 2030. For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleu in Juba.
From Juba, we move back to Jonglei. The Jonglei State Wildlife Service building in Bor collapsed during a heavy rainstorm yesterday. Four employees were wounded, according to the Deputy Director of Wildlife Services. The building housed critical wildlife protection activities which serve 11 Jonglei State counties. Yesterday's heavy rainstorm blew off the roof of the building and caused the main section of the structure to collapse. Speaking in Arabic, Ateng Nyon Yach, Jonglei State Deputy Director of Wildlife, says all of the contents in the administration building were destroyed.
The problem happened yesterday, the 30th. It rained heavily, and the rains removed all the Salem boards and wounded people. The office of the ministry was destroyed. It was cracked, and the wind removed the iron sheets. The rain flooded all the offices.
Yaj says one of the four injured workers were transported to the local hospital. The others were allowed to return home. The state wildlife building contained 9 offices, including a meeting hall, director's offices, and anti-poaching office. He says operations have been temporarily moved to Bor County Wildlife Department.
As what we will do, I do not know. This office is very small and it cannot do anything. It cannot accommodate the cupboard of the office, the books in the office, and the chairs in the office. Everything has been ruined.
Yach says his office warned Juba about cracks in the building's structure before yesterday's collapse. His directorate sent a letter to the National Wildlife Service headquarters in Juba on March 6th, requesting that all cracks be repaired. That request went unanswered. Yach says conservation of wildlife is very important in South Sudan because it is a source of economic income. It also provides recreation and pleasure for citizens and tourists. But he says, for now, the monitoring of different species of wildlife in Jonglei State will have to be put on hold. That report was prepared by Jacob Achek in Bor. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Election results in Nigeria show former military ruler Muhammadu Buhari moving close to becoming the country's next president. With results in from nearly all of Nigeria's 36 states, Buhari had won a majority of them and led incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan by nearly 3 million votes nationwide. Results are being announced state by state at the headquarters of Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission. Saudi-led airstrikes targeted Yemen's Houthi Shiite rebels for the 6th straight day today, destroying missiles and weapons depots around the capital, Sana'a. The airstrikes are meant to halt the momentum of the Iranian-backed rebels who have advanced toward the country's main southern city, Aden. And finally, Iran and 6 world powers ramped up the pace of negotiations today for a preliminary deal on Tehran's nuclear program. Officials caution any agreement may come up short of the one envisioned by a midnight deadline. They say they're hoping to agree on some type of declaration later in the day, but it is not clear if the document will indicate the talks have succeeded or failed. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Juba Wow Malakal by a group of South Sudanese artists. I've been listening to that group from Unity State singing about Juba Wow Malakal. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Send me back.